Welcome to the LGC News Roundup, the podcast from the Local Government Chronicles news team, which looks at the biggest and most significant stories of the week for councils. I'm Sarah Calkin, the LGC editor, and today I'm joined by Deputy Editor Martin George and Head of Content Kirsty Weekly. So, hello.
Hi.
So, Kirsty, what's been going on this week? What's the big story you've been looking at?
Well, I don't know if it's a big story anymore, but the one that I've put seemingly a lot of effort into is finding out what the new ministerial portfolios are, which we were expecting towards the middle to the end of last week. And yesterday I was still making slightly more desperate phone calls to the Department for Levelling Up's press office asking when we would know. Obviously, we found out that Lee Rowley would be the new local government minister last week because he tweeted it, as all big political announcements are made these days.
Presumably they must have known what they were responsible for, because otherwise, you know, how are you going to get on with the job if you don't actually know what you're doing? But I don't know why it's taken DLUX so long to tell anybody else.
Yeah, no, it's very, but we know. Lee Rowley actually went and did his first speech at the beginning of this week to the National Association of Local Councils, its conference, which had to be held on remotely on Zoom because of the train strikes. Maybe luckily or unluckily for him, he didn't actually have to be faced with too many people from local government in his first outing. He made all the right noises. Obviously, there's not a lot he can say eight days into the job. But he did sound very enthusiastic about local government, so enthusiastic that he has encouraged a member of his family to join their local parish council.
Of course, he was a councillor himself.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Westminster.
Yes. He was a councillor in Westminster, and is also said that as a constituency MP, he really values the work of councils that are in his area. So yeah, all the right noises, whether or not it feeds through into.
He wasn't very encouraging on whether or not councils ought to face any cuts, though, I don't think.
No, the sort of message was be realistic. It's really challenging economic times. Obviously, there's the big fiscal statement next week. I don't think anyone's expecting any additional money. But he does like the sector.
That's something. And so, just give us a quick run through then. Who else has got what brief?
So the other sort of key ministers are Lucy Fraser, who is the main housing minister, responsible for overall housing policy and planning, and Dehina Davidson, who is continuing as Levelling Up Minister, where she's also responsible for devolution, that we're going to talk about that in a bit. And the fourth minister in the department is Felicity Buchan, who is the Housing and Homelessness Minister.
Great, so we know at last. And what else have you been sort of following closely this week?
Yeah, so this week and towards the end of last week, we've been running quite a few stories about disputes between the Home Office and various councils around the country over housing asylum seekers in hotels, which everyone agrees isn't the best place to house them. The Home Office has even admitted that some of the hotels they're using aren't the most appropriate hotels. But what the Home Office is dealing with is a massive backlog in applications or application decisions that it needs to process, partly due to an increase in people arriving in small boats, but also other delays and issues with the Home Office's processes. It also changed the way it houses asylum seekers around the country in the spring of this year. So it used to be local authorities would be part of a voluntary system. So they were signed up and said, we will accept so many asylum seekers in our area. And it's now switched to being the Home Office doesn't have to wait for volunteers. It can just house them where it feels is best. Which has led to a number of councils objecting and using the court process to try to prevent the Home Office using hotels that they say aren't suitable, either because it will take away from the local economy because they can't then be used for tourism, or it will, or the hotels themselves are too remote, so it's hard to provide the wraparound services that are needed for people who have come a very long distance and need help settling into life in the UK.
And haven't you said you sort of drive past one near where you live?
Yeah, there's...
on the A12 when there's no public transport links or...
Yeah, no.
Like, local amenities.
Yeah, I mean, public transport out in Essex isn't... If you compare it to being in London, it's not that great. You know, getting a bus after dark can be challenging. And yeah, it's you know, it's a hotel that's just off the main road. I'd say I've never stayed there because I live 5 minutes down the road, so I can't speak to the quality of the hotel. But it's not somewhere that's is not central to you know, the main shops and council offices and things that you would need if you don't have a car in.
Yeah. So I mean, everyone agrees this is not the, you know, hotels is not the solution. I think one of the things councils seem to be really frustrated about is just there's no long-term plan though, there's no alternative solution being put forward. It's not like the Home Office is saying, yes, this is a stopgap until we do X. There's just...
Yeah, and it's really short notice as well. Like the councils are sort of discovering that that their hotels have been used to house asylum seekers without any real warning, which makes it difficult to make sure you have got the services in place. I think North Devon is an example of that, where they'd put out a statement a couple of weeks ago saying, oh, we're really concerned to learn that this hotel is going to be used because it's, and their reason was it's very remote, it's not suitable. They had a meeting with the Home Office and the Home Office's contractor and then went away under the impression that that hotel was not going to be used. And then a few days later, I realised that it was being used after all and it had been stood up. And I think that's, we haven't really got to the bottom of where the breakdown in communication happened there.
I think it's interesting, though, that lots of local government have been taking legal action, but they've not really been successful, have they, apart from some interim injunctions?
Yeah, there was some initial success with those interim injunctions. Great Yarmouth got one a few weeks ago, followed by Stoke City Council. Stoke then lost its bid for a continuance, so it wasn't able to make that injunction permanent. Two other councils, Ipswich and East Riding of Yorkshire, had their day in court earlier this week to again seek a continuance of their injunction. And that judgment has been reserved, so we're still waiting to find out what happens there. Another council, North Northamptonshire, tried to get an interim injunction and was unable to because the court refused to hear that bid and said it would only hear a full bid where both parties can present their arguments. So they're now waiting to see how everything turns out elsewhere. So it's still quite a small sample of what's going on, but it's not looking as though it's easy. It's not an easy route for council to take.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's sort of where we are with that. One will be watching closely as it develops.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be returning to it.
Sarah, whilst I've been doing that, you've been getting to grips with where we stand with devolution at the moment.
Yeah, so well, I've been Jessica Hill, formerly of this parish, who moved on to pastures new last week, have been doing a big sort of roundup before she left of where all the devolution deals announced in the Levelling Up White Paper had got to. So the White Paper announced 9 areas that were going to get these new county deals, and the ambition was that they would be agreed by autumn. Now, that always looked fairly ambitious, given, I think I looked earlier, since Greater Manchester was announced at the end of 2014, we've had another 8 deals in the 8 years since. So it's sort of kind of 1 a year for the past 8 years. So then do 9 in 8 months was always going to be a tall order.
And without all the government chaos over the past few months, added into the mix, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that is that's definitely been a factor in delays in some places. Absolutely. So I mean, I'm not going to go through all of them in detail, but just kind of give a quick sort of state of play. So the, of the nine areas, two have already done a deal. So that's the Derbyshire and Derby, Nottinghamshire and Nottingham, who are coming together to form the East Midlands Combined Authority. Then I think the next ones viewed as sort of the closest are Cornwall and Norfolk, which are both hoping to get a deal with the mayor, and Suffolk, also thought to be close, but not quite sure whether they're going to go for a mayor or not. If you do go for a mayor, you get additional powers and funding, and crucially, you get one of these investment funds worth so many millions a year. And then sort of the back of the queue, Devon, Plymouth and Torbay, Hull and East Yorkshire, where they think they can't quite agree amongst themselves whether to have a mayor or not, and probably not going to happen, is Durham, where Durham's now actually talking to the wider other six northeast councils around joining a new northeast combined authority, and then Leicestershire, where Leicester, the city of Leicester, doesn't want to be involved, and that actually makes it quite an odd geography because to do a deal there. So so that's where we are. Jessica also looked at sort of who might be in the second wave, assuming there is one. I think we've sort of Surrey and the councils in Cheshire and Warrington, so Cheshire West and Chester, Cheshire East and Warrington, those two places could be next in line, and Greater Lincolnshire as well. And certainly all those places have been having discussions for 4 or 5 years now about devolution, so I think a lot of them would be quite close to being ready to go. I don't think any of those are necessarily guaranteed to have a mayor or not. I think Greater Lincolnshire is thinking about it, but Surrey and the Cheshire councils probably won't. So yeah, that's kind of a rattle through where we are. I guess we just don't know what's going to happen with the government.
What do you think Michael Gove's return to DLUHC means for these devolution deals? Because wasn't it, you know, part of his announcements earlier in the year was that some of these would fall?
Yeah, so obviously he was in the department when the Levelling Up white paper was published. You know, he was the first Secretary of State that managed to get a devolution framework out in the public domain, which has been something that was talked about for years prior. So you would think it bodes fairly well, but these deals also need some Treasury and PM sign off. Rishi Sunak's obviously like really across this brief, having been in the local government department a few years ago. But you know, he's obviously got a lot of competing priorities, and it depends, you know, how much time he wants to give to this. I think it's, I mean, from the government's point of view, they're trying to save money. These are actually quite cheap to do in the short term because they don't really come with any great deal of additional funding. You know, that's one of the criticisms of them. The main additional funding will be these investment funds, which are worth sort of tens of millions a year over 30 years. And the idea is that those areas can then use that to sort of leverage other investment. But actually, that's quite a small fry in terms of, you know, Treasury spending. So they do offer an opportunity if the government wants to point to something that it's doing rather than just things that it's not doing or cutting, then it could be a quick win. But yeah, I guess we'll see.
We talk about Levelling Up white paper. Obviously, Andy Haldane, former chief economist at the Bank of England, was like the key author of that. He actually gave a speech on Wednesday. It was actually about health and the economy. There was a link to devolution. But he was warning that this is for the first time in 200 years, health is being a drag on our nation's economy and holding us back. What's the solution? Right. He's saying devolution is a really key part of that. He was pointing to Manchester, where health and social care was devolved, and we've seen academic evidence in the last few weeks that that may have helped increase lifespan. His actual words were, we need to hurry up and giddy up on the devolution agenda. So, you know, I think that's pretty firm what he wants to do.
When the Greater Manchester deal was struck and then some of the deals after it, there was a big focus was sort of generating economic growth and getting investment in your place, but there was also a big public service reform side of it, and Greater Manchester used to talk about, you know, they wanted to control of all the public spending in Greater Manchester because, you know, the synergies, you could join it up and hopefully you would reduce the overall spend. That agenda hasn't really been pursued to the same degree as the kind of growth side of things, but yeah, that sounds like what he's perhaps talking about there.
We were talking actually in the, I think it was a news meeting earlier, about how Haldane, as well as being advisor to Gove and DLUHC, he's also been advising Lisa Nandy, the Labour shadow government minister.
Yeah, so when I was at a Labour Party conference just a few weeks ago, although it feels a lot longer ago, Lisa Nandy mentioned a couple of times in various fringe events that she'd been meeting with Andy Haldane to talk about Labour's version of levelling up, which may or may not be called levelling up. But yeah, so it's interesting that he's speaking to both sides.
It feels like we've always said that for levelling up to succeed, it takes years. It needs to be across many political cycles. You know, and assuming that there'll be a change of government at some point, possibly in 2 years' time, you know, if Andy Haldane is talking to both sides, and perhaps with tacit permission from Michael Gove even, that would be a good augur for this actually being some political consensus over what's a multi-generational project for the country.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I know, I think it was Sarah, you mentioned the autumn statement then. That was the big caveat at the event on Wednesday. I don't know if you know Jill Rutter. She used to be a Treasury civil servant, Downing Street civil servant. Her big warning was, unless something has health in its name, it's probably going to be cut. And then, especially if it's a service provided by local government. So, be warned.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the sector might not be too surprised by that, but it just seemed baffling to think we're going to, after the last 10 years, 12 years of austerity, basically, we're going to have more of the same. And, you know, you can't just keep squeezing the same services forever.
Jill's point is quite interesting. She was saying that actually there's an incentive for politicians. They don't go into politics to shovel more and more money into the NHS. She's saying, can we have a brave conversation about taking some money out of NHS and giving it to the preventative services that would actually reduce demand? It's clearly not going to happen in the autumn statement. I think the one thing that seems to be agreed is the NHS budget is protected. But for people like that to be saying that's the conversation we need to have, again, you know, maybe that'll grow into something in the months or years to come.
Yeah, I think it's just really tricky, isn't it? If it's a zero sum game and you're trying to, it's not like the NHS is not spending all the money that it's got, you know. So what do you stop doing? And
it's really hard to get the sort of evidence base that you need that preventative services work because they've prevented something. And it's often, you know, it needs those really long studies. You know, if you intervene early, like, you know, it's a 10, 15-year study to prove that actually that intervention prevented health deteriorating in multiple different ways. So I think it's something that it's very easy to agree. Yes, invest in prevention. It's very hard for people to do in reality, I think. It's not to say they shouldn't try.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, what do you guys think? So, autumn statement coming up next week. What are we going to see? Lots of ideas floating around in the national media. A lot of kite flying, I think. I don't think people really know. But is there a sense for local government what's in store?
I think Yeah, I think we're not that optimistic about investment zones.
Yeah, and I think the social care cap also sounds like it's certainly not going to be introduced anytime soon. So, yeah, and I mean, the additional funding that was going to support that had already been lost when they reversed the planned national insurance increase. So, yeah, that's... I'm not sure that will make much difference to councils in the immediate term, but it doesn't help social care services.
I think the one I was interested in was the sort of, it seems like a yo-yo policy of whether they'll lift the threshold for council tax increases and triggering referendums. I think, was it a week ago that we were briefed they're looking at it, then we were told they're not looking at it, then the Times this week said they're looking at it again, but it's still probably not going to happen.
I think it tells you that even people working on national papers with lots of links into important people in government still don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's possible even Rishi Sunak doesn't still know exactly what's going to be in it. So, yeah, there will be lots of speculation over the course of the next week, and we'll find out next Thursday. Well, we would like to try and end on something not so bleak. Anyone seen anything made them smile this week?
I'm not sure if this is bleak or not, but I spotted a story on BBC News about the new name for a museum in Perth. Anyone like to guess what the council might have decided to call the museum? And they've consulted the public, there's been a public vote, it's all very democratic.
Oh, no, it's not another Boaty McBoat face, is it?
It is not museum face, which is actually quite hard to say. Martin, any ideas?
They're going to call it Brian.
Brian would be a very good name for a museum, particularly if there were lots of Brians in the area. I don't know the particular makeup in Perth. No, the public have overwhelmingly gone for Perth Museum.
Hooray.
Well, I think that's all we have time for. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can always find out more about these stories at lgcplus.com. If you don't subscribe and you'd like to, you can enter the code ROUNDUP, all capital letters, to get 10% off. If you enjoyed listening, please like and subscribe and check out our monthly podcast, The Local Authority, which takes a more in-depth look at some of the challenges facing councils. Goodbye.